Welcome to Time Bender Talks, the ultimate destination for professional photographers. This weekly podcast is hosted by Peggy MacArthur, a certified professional photographer with over 30 years' experience and the creator of the Headshot Strategist Certification Program. Peggy interviews a diverse range of experts in business, branding, marketing, networking, and photography. So whether you've been doing this for years or you're just starting out, we've got you covered. Oh, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on our latest episodes filled with tips, insights, and lots of fun.
Yay, I am here with my new friend, Aisla, and we are going to have a lot of fun talking about communication and strengthening our communication. So first of all, welcome, and thank you for agreeing to come hang out and chat with me today.
I was really excited to come and I love what you're doing, so thank you for having me. I'm delighted.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about who you are and where you are on your journey.
My name is Aisla, and I have a consulting business. It's called Bicurion, and I do what's called fractional operations for some companies, organizational strategy, and business development. So talking about communication and marketing and things like that with typically smaller companies, like often solopreneurs and startups. It's a very unique experience, I think, as the startup culture and the small business world, as opposed to what we look at in the corporate. And I feel for some reason, I'm just really well suited to it, probably because I like to do a lot of things. So I'm not in one role, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I know that you and I talked on the phone before I was like, can you please be on my podcast? So I know that you're passionate about this, but tell us why you are passionate about helping people strengthen their communication and really move their businesses forward. And how do you use your zone of genius, your expertise in doing that?
That's a good question. So I feel like the world is better when people are doing things that they are competent in, and competent is a range, so and or passionate about. So we build competency over time, and there's something very fulfilling about knowing what you're up to, how to do it, and even how to understand what you need to improve. It's a very powerful and fulfilling place to be. And there's a lot of people in the world, especially right now, that are really trying to find their own place to live in a place where they can do the work they believe in or they want to do or need to do to pay the bills and also have an actual life and engage with family and friends and children and art, whatever their passion is. And so I've really just loved working with all these different business owners and people who are trying to build a dream to organize their thoughts. And in a lot of ways that is the first piece of communication is learning how to communicate with yourself.
Exactly.
So you can understand what your actual goals are and how to evaluate that so that you can then work on achieving them. I used to say to my kids, you know, a goal without a plan is a wish. And not that wishes aren't great. They're just less likely to happen. There are fewer fairy godmothers out there than we would like. So that communication and that understanding of your goal and what you're going to do to get there can make a really big difference in also how you evaluate your success.
Right there, how you evaluate your success. I apparently can't say words today, which is no problem. We're just doing a podcast, right? How you evaluate your success, because what I think is success is not what you think is success. And being able to communicate and really identify what it is that you want. In my program, I call it the just statement. It's like, I just want, what is that thing? Because I think we forget sometimes. We get so busy trying to pay the bills and trying to like juggle all the things that we forget why we actually started doing this thing that we were passionate about, you know?
Right. Well, and there's a lot of messaging that is very amplified that is constantly reinforcing the idea that there's something wrong with you, something you lack, someone's going to sell you the solution, and that there's a right way to do things. And I really stand in the best thing is the thing that works for you.
Exactly.
And there's, you know, once again, caveats, you know, obviously if it doesn't work for anyone at all other than you and you're trying to, you know, give information or that, then you maybe need to adjust a little bit. But the process really should start with not what am I supposed to do? How is this tool everybody uses, whatever that is. It should start with how do I roll? What do I do? And what works for me? And how can I build on that to continue to improve what I'm up to, as opposed to I'll just put all that to the side and try this other thing that's supposed to be the thing and feel badly about my ability to do it.
Yeah. And I think so many people are so caught up into that, that they're miserable because they're trying to reach somebody else's definition of success or definition of, you know, I've made it. I think I grew up different probably than a lot of people. My parents were entrepreneurs, and my grandfather used to own a big dairy farm. And in the late 60s, or actually early 60s, I think, the city or whatever came and bought his farm because they were building and they bought his farm. And so after that, he became a janitor of the city, like, courthouse, and he loved it. Like, I remember, you know, he was doing that all of my lifetime. Like, I never saw the farm. The farm was gone before I was born. Mm-hmm. But he loved it, and he was good at it. And he also painted. Those were things that he just loved doing. He loved being able to, you know, see the people and keep everything clean. And it always strikes me that, you know, we need janitors. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly like cleaning up after other people's mess. So if somebody actually enjoys that, then why would that be an embarrassing job or a less than job? That's something that we need. And it's, you know, it's something amazing. So, you know, and I've always, you know, been making money at what I'm passionate about. So I've always been really fortunate, but I've seen friends and family that are out there hating their job and being miserable all week. And then all weekend, all they do is complain about their job. And then they go back to the job. And I'm like, wow, like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, what is that success if they drive a nicer car than me and they're miserable literally every single day? Is that success? I mean, maybe it is for them. But yeah, I just think it's kind of silly.
Well, and a lot of us identify work as pain. You hear it even just their phrases, like no pain, no gain. And it's one of those things where, yes, there is a level of effort or work. I work with a guy who makes the distinction between work and toil. And I really like that. So there's things that you do that are your work, and they can be like very fulfilling. And then there's things that you toil at. And I think the toil should be a low percentage, and discovering ways to work, because, like, you know, you always have to do the dishes to clean the bathroom, but really you just have to make sure they're done. And like you said, if there's someone that wants to do it and they like to do it, and you can make that arrangement, and it's still done. But it's really about distinguishing, I think, for yourself and understanding what those internal monologues are that you believe are true. Like, I used to have my first tagline when I started my company was organizational strategy for artists and dreamers.
I love it.
And it was because I worked with a lot of artists and very mission-driven people who really did have an underlying belief that being successful meant they were no longer legitimate. Like that somehow, and by successful, I mean feeling a sense of security in their life, some predictability, and some kind of like financial stability that suited them to their needs. And they really did have this like absolute, often unconscious belief, because they would say it the way everybody does. But if you really talk to them, like, oh, no, I know that's not true. But their behavior showed that they actually did believe it was true. And you can even see them self-sabotage when they started to be successful in something in that way, because they were so that underlying belief was so powerful. And it gets perpetuated. Like, it's not like they woke up one day and thought that. That's something that is in our society. People, you hear all the time from people. So it's not like they make it up. And it's very damaging.
Yeah. And I think it's that that crazy belief that you're a sellout if you're all of a sudden successful. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't be both. You can't be passionate and doing what you love and being a creative and being an artist and being successful. It's that starving artist thing. It's like, who wants to be a starving artist? Like, it's okay to start out a starving artist, but you know, a few years in, like, who wants to keep living that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and like, there's that belief, right, that people should create art just because they want to. That's the other side of it. That's a social thing. Like, why are we paying people to do these things that are callings of the heart? And my feeling is, if we didn't live in a society that required money, we wouldn't need to. But we do. So those folks deserve that. And my challenge has been, I used to say a week, but that's never going to happen. I'm like, go a whole 24 hours with no art. Don't listen to the radio. Don't watch any shows. Don't let any images come into you. You can't do it. It's everywhere. And yet we have this idea that it's something separated from life and business. It's not. We need the art and the creativity as much as we need the spreadsheets and math, and it all together, it makes beautiful things happen. But we have to value that.
It's kind of funny that schools have pushed out art and pushed out music and pushed out all of those and only concentrate on STEM, you know, science and math, and they've pushed out all the art. And they push you to go to college and they push you to go to the corporate job. But when you get home from that college class or when you get home from that corporate job, what's the first thing you do? Turn on the radio, turn on the TV, go to a play, mm-hmm. go to a movie, go to a, you know, you pull those arts back in. So obviously they're very important to us, you know. So when did you decide, like, hey, I can make a living doing what I'm passionate about? Like, I can do that. Like, was there like an aha moment, or did it just kind of happen?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that it was a little bit different in that I started working at these nonprofits, and it was almost like not making a living. The first job I had, I made $500 a month for about 50 hours a week of work. Like, it was, but it was in my early 20s and I could do that. And I just found that I was good at it. I was really good at the organizing, the strategy, the underlying resource management, anticipating the needs and making appropriate plans. And I loved that feeling of being part of something. Being part of building community. I used to help run Pride Fest in two different states, and seeing people really express themselves and feel that sense of safety, because there's a lot of like limitations and fear, and to have people have that sense of there's a place they could be themselves for a day or a place they could call. It was so fulfilling. And so both pieces, like the result of the labor and the labor itself, were both things that had different pieces of satisfaction. And then as my kids got older, I, you know, when you run a small nonprofit, you work nights and weekends, like all the time. And I really didn't want to miss out on those last couple of years of them being home. You know, I didn't know, maybe one of them would decide to study in Antarctica. I would never see them. And so I decided to leave that position to spend a couple of years like being more at home and to work part-time doing the consulting. And as I was doing it, I found that I really enjoyed it. It was being able to do similarly what I had done for those nonprofits, but for multiple companies and for often people. My first few clients were artists, and to have the experience of being able to help someone feel that sense of trusting themselves. Like, I'm not here to tell you what to do, right? Like, I'm here to support you. I have some experiences that will help you. And at the same time, if I show you an option or a solution and you're like, it doesn't work for me, cool, I'll go find something else. Like, because that's my job, is to help that person feel really confident in what they're doing so that they can go out and do more. And so that was really, it wasn't like so much a decision maybe as an evolution.
I like that. I think for me, everything in my life has just been an evolution. Like, I think as long as you're moving forward, you know, you fall into these things. And some of them you're like, oh, that was great for a season. Now let me get back on track over here. But sometimes magic happens by accident. Mm-hmm. This whole thing, this all happened because of the pandemic, because I was bored. This literally, I'm doing this because I was bored 3 years ago and was like, okay, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it's still staying true to yourself and staying in that passion. So we're focusing on communication.
Yes.
And I loved earlier, I know I'm like, it's all right. I love what you said earlier about really communicating to yourself what your goals are, but how important is being able to communicate to other people, helping entrepreneurs, portrait photographers, professional photographers, really not only get clients, but make that sale, make that transaction. How is communication important for that?
Well, so one of the things that I see a lot with solopreneurs and people who have specialized knowledge but may not necessarily understand that they do is they'll make leaps of logic that they don't know are a leap. So I like to think of it as you've got all the departments in your head and you're used to telling the lighting department what to do, but then maybe you're working with a few people and now you have to say it out loud to an actual person. And you don't actually realize how much of what you communicate inside is impressions. It's not actual words. And so when you start working with other people, whether they're people you're photographing or, you know, maybe you're doing a larger set or something, you have to actually slow down and give steps that you're not used to having to articulate when you work more by yourself, and it can be very frustrating. And it can also lead to people not necessarily understanding what's happening. And I think especially with something like photography, where there's a lot of ignorance, and most of us don't know anything about it. Like I, you know, take a picture, I'm like, magic. And yet, but it's a craft. Like you've got a lot of like technical knowledge and artistic expression that's happening. And so I also think there's that piece where people understand. And so one of the biggest things is you want people to feel comfortable. You want them to feel that sense of, you know, what's going on and that they can trust you and that you, especially with the vulnerability of photography, that they can feel that sense of getting clarity about how the steps are going to go. And I think that piece is really important, and it can feel awkward or tedious, but practicing, even I recommend to people that they, when they're doing something of that nature, sit down with a few friends and just go and give the friend instruction, someone that you won't cry when they say it didn't go the way that you wanted. And then that friend can tell you back like, oh, I didn't know you were going to want me to do this, because that will reduce those moments of irritation or frustration in the action. And you build that rapport. And really and truly, I mean, in terms of when you're selling people things, and I hesitate to use the word because I feel like there's a lot of connotations in it that aren't necessarily accurate. It's really about the relationship. Something mm-hmm. intimate like that is a relationship. And so sometimes it's not going to be the right fit. You know, you're going to do everything perfect. You're going to have the right style. You communicate perfectly. And the other person is not going to bite because for them, there's a vibe. And that doesn't mean anything wrong. It doesn't mean you did anything wrong or anything like that. It just means that's not the right vibe. And then for some people that's the right vibe, then you also add the concreteness of clarity. And then it's much more likely that they're going to say yes or no. You do have to give them also. The other thing I've seen is I had this woman, I tried to hire her. I literally said, I want to hire you. And she was like, oh, okay. And she went off on this other thing. And I'm like, how do I get a yes or a no? Because it wasn't a photography thing, but it's so funny to me. And later on, we talked about it. We stayed social friends. She goes, oh, I didn't realize that. I'm like, I don't understand how those words did not mean that to you. So people have a lot in their heads. You have to break through it. So you have to stay really simple, I think.
I used to have a real fear of communicating my prices to people. Mm. I don't know if it was like a fear of rejection or a fear of unworthiness. Like I thought because what I do to me is really easy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's second nature. I would do it whether somebody paid me or not. And, you know, there were several years where the word got out that I would do it whether people paid me or not. And that's not a way to run a business. But I really had a really hard time. And what I found was when I made a process, like, okay, every time before I book, I go through and, you know, I explain what my prices are, what my packages are. Like, that's just part of my telling you what I do. And then, you know, we go ahead and book. And then when they show up for the appointment, it's like, all right, so are we going to take care of that? Are you going to Venmo? Do you have a credit card? How are we going to take care of this? And that's part of my routine that I do with everyone. And then that way it starts feeling more natural. And then I'm able to communicate it without that fear, which is irrational, like obviously irrational, but it is like, you know, creatives just want to create and this whole business thing stuff sucks. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think really learning to communicate. When you were talking, it reminded me of a story and I had never thought of this particular story in this light. So humor me. This was about 25 years ago. My kids were like 4 or 5 years old. And my son says, Mom, why are you so nice to your clients when you take their pictures? And you're so mean to us when you take our pictures. And I said at the time, I said, because my clients listen to me and you're not listening to me. But that wasn't it. Really what it was is I expected my 5-year-old son to know how to pose. Like, he's been doing this his whole life. Like, why am I having to, you know, work with this little tiny kid, which is again, another thing that, but you know, but it's sometimes it's true. We forget that people don't know what we know and we have to communicate that and we have to be patient and we have to meet them where they're at and remember that they're also dealing with their own insecurities and their own fears and their own, you know, I don't want to do this. I hope I don't look bad in front of the, in these pictures in front of the camera, you know? So we have to really communicate and get that, get them to a place of comfort and build that relationship. And then everything else, you know, as long as we don't drop the ball. And when somebody says, can I hire you? We're like, yeah. And did you know that? or not ask them to pay you or things like that. But it's all in the communication. So, but it's funny that when you were telling that, when you were talking, that story came to mind. I was like, I was expecting a 5-year-old child to know what I knew. You know,
when it's your kid too. So you kind of assume your kids, I do.
But when they know, we've been doing
this. They must know what I know. We hang out all the time. It should be obvious. So I'm trying to remember, I had a gentleman on my podcast who said something that I thought was so brilliant when you talked about marketing. And he said, ultimately, because he does visual design. And he said something along the lines of ultimately marketing is simplifying the communication in such a way that it is easy for people to understand and digest. And I thought that was a really great way to reflect upon, ultimately think about if you were going, and that's a mistake a lot of people make, right? Like they think buyers are not like them, but you are a buyer, you are a client. So think about what you would need. If you were going to see somebody for a photography thing, would you want them to be upfront so that you can make a clear decision? Because sometimes a budget's a budget, right? Like some people can't afford it and they can't. Some people, there's a different thing, but you start there. And then step two is how would you feel that communication? You know, would you want it to be on, you know, in a piece of paper, direct, and really think about it from that perspective, because we're all people in the end. And that's really what people want. They want to have a sense of being seen as a person. They want to have a sense of clarity. They want to feel like they're getting a value for what they're giving. And I think, once again, I think photography is a little intimate. So they also need to feel a sense of, you know, safety and confidence, because it's a very different kind of engagement.
We literally peel your outside away and take pictures of your soul, right? Your whole essence. Like it is a very vulnerable, place to be photographed because you have to see yourself and you may not like what that is. And, you know, our job is to show you your best self and to, I don't know, personally, I take it as a personal job to show you why you are beautiful, because I love seeing the beauty in people and their uniquenesses and their quirks and their, you know, the way maybe an eyebrow goes up or a half of a smile or whatever it is. I think those things are just amazing. And I love to point those out to people and how cool they are. And I think that, you know, communicating that to people helps them. It helps them beyond the photo shoot. It helps them, you know, see something that they didn't know and not be so scared to look at themselves mm-hmm. in other areas of their life. I know and that's deep and cheesy, but that's how I feel.
It's really true. And that comes out. The things that you think and feel do come out. Like they say, when you're on the phone with people, still smile. They can hear it in your voice. Uh-huh. I also want to call back what you said about when you were learning how to talk about your pricing. I really would recommend anybody that feels in any way uncomfortable, practice until it rolls off your tongue. Mm-hmm. Because if you stutter or you start making excuses or apologizing for your pricing, then that's what the person is going to hold on to. That's how they're going to receive it. And so you really need to get into a place where you feel comfortable saying what you're saying and keep it very direct. Like, because mm-hmm. the other thing is people often hear the first thing that you say, especially if it's a number, even if you correct it, that's still what they're going to go back to. So make sure that first number is what you actually mean. And then they can always get counter, they can ask for things or whatever, but they typically will remember that first number. I don't know if you've ever seen that with your friends or kids or something. I used to do this and it was so ridiculous. But I'd say, oh, I don't want to be there by 8:30. So let's leave a half an hour before we suggested. And then people, they remember 8:30. and then I'm like, why are you doing this? But it's so typical. It happens all the time. And so it's just simple things like that. And remembering to practice, even though you feel weird in front of the mirror with a friend in the car driving, until those things feel really comfortable.
And that's absolutely true. And practice in the mirror, say it out loud, tell people, say your prices out loud until it doesn't feel like gross anymore, because it does. It feels for me anyway, like mm-hmm. anytime I up my prices or anytime I change my packages, it's like, but you can't stutter. You can't, because they will feel that insecurity mm-hmm. and even if it's subconscious, they're going to feel it and that's going to make them doubt. Where if you're like, hey, I charge $600 for XYZ, they're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And they either can't afford it or they can't, but you don't need to put an emotion on it. It is a number. Right. And when we put our emotions on it, especially if it's a negative emotion, then that's transferred over and they subconsciously pick up on it. And then they're like, well, wait a minute, 600, why, what am I getting for that? And they start, you know, mm-hmm. kind of arguing with you about it because they knew that you weren't sure about it. So they're like, why should I be sure about this? But mm-hmm. when you're sure about it, they're like, oh, okay, that's the number. Like, you know, you go to Target, it's $10, you pay $10. You don't like, mm-hmm. okay, whatever. You either pay it or you don't. But I think really answering to yourself and communicating to yourself. I don't really buy the whole charge what you're worth thing because I mean, have you met me? I'm just saying, like, afford this.
That's totally fair, right? Well, and you're not a number, you're a person, right? Like it's a different thing.
Right. So I do believe that you should charge of what you're comfortable with and what can make you the living that you want, the lifestyle that you need to live. Like, I don't think you should be ashamed of your prices. I am, you know, there's photographers that charge way more than me and they're comfortable with that. And that's fine. And there's photographers that charge way less than me. And that's, you know, where they're at. But you need to be honest about it. But what I do find is when you're clear at communicating, people don't have a problem with it. If you're giving them a good, honest price, it's us that have the problem saying it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Well, there's two parts to most sales. And I learned this when I was doing fundraising, which is there's people, if they feel a sense of alignment and connection, they have a high likelihood of wanting to work with you and to hire you. And so the two things are that you're looking for is they're both evaluating the service on some level, or in terms of fundraising, is the thing you're working towards. It something that I have a belief in such that I want to financially support it. Right. Uh-huh. And then when it's a, so there's that evaluation piece, what's the what's your quality of work or who do you work with? Like if you mostly work with I know you talked about working with actors and maybe this is like a school, they'd want to know like, how do you transition? What's the difference mm-hmm. between working with little kids and actors? And you're like, nothing, they're all the same. But you know, someone might need
actors
to have-
all children, no.
Exactly, I was trying not to go there, but then thank you. And so that's like, you might have to bridge that for them in terms of how what they want and what you do are actually in alignment. And for me, there's a, part of why I avoid the word sales is because there's an association of persuasion in that I'm not really into. I feel like that for me, it's like being an ambassador. Like I have this thing and these are the ways that I am good at doing that. And then if I'm talking to someone and I can tell like they really need something different, I am super happy to connect them with someone who can actually better meet their need. Because that's where I say the communication with yourself, being really honest, like, mm-hmm. I could do this. It's not that I couldn't do it. It's just, I'm not really the best fit. And I work with enough consultants that I can recommend a good fit once I've talked to somebody. And so there's that piece, right? Like, how does it match? And then the other piece though, is sometimes they're like, no, I really like you. I'll work with you. It's like, all right, I can do this part. Now And there's obviously some caveats to that as well. But I just think that that's a really important thing to understand is, like you said, not only that it's just a number, mm-hmm. it's also not personal if you're not a good fit. Like, you go to a restaurant and there's 23 entrees, you're not eating all of them. You're that's okay. You don't have to like all the entrees. And it doesn't mean anything about someone else getting a different entree or the restaurant or anything like that. And we have this. And I think especially because photography is a little more personal as a doer as well, being a photographer, that learning how to understand that it's not that someone doesn't like you or value or think you're great. They just, it's not the right fit and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is a tough thing to really do is to not take it personal. But I think when we look at other people in our industries as colleagues instead of competition, it takes that sting out. In other words, if somebody comes to me and A, I'm already booked, or B, I just don't think that I'm going to be able to give them what they really want. But I know so-and-so over here that can. And I say, you know what, go talk to them. If you think they're a better fit for you, go with them. Otherwise, I'm happy to help you. And the reason you can do that is because we're colleagues, we're not competition, because you know what? The right people are going to find me and mm-hmm. it's going to make my life so much easier when I work with the right people, because they're going to give me excellent reviews. They're going to tell all their friends.
Right.
And if somebody that was like, meh, or a bad match, they're not going to give me reviews and they may even give me a bad review. You don't want that. You want the right people to work with. So, all right, we can chat all day clearly. So give me one tip to leave our viewers with on how to have effective communication and build those relationships that turn into revenue for your business. Something simple, just one tip.
I was going to say, like, that's just like
a that's big loaded question.
One tip, effective communication to build those relationships. I think that it's the clarity piece. It's really getting clear about what you're offering and being comfortable doing that practicing. And I think that the more clear you are, the more clear you're able to communicate and the more easily the right fit for what you have to offer will show up.
Oh, I like that. That's true. Because if you are putting out a message and you're being very clear about that, then it's naturally going to attract the people that identify with that.
Mm-hmm. That's how it's worked. Literally every time I have been able to succinctly explain what I do, I have gotten more business. Just every time.
That's actually mind blowing. That's a mic drop, because it's true. What do you do? Can you tell me what you do? And don't say I do everything or I take pictures, because mm-hmm. that doesn't tell me anything.
Right.
I mean, Uncle Joe has a camera. He takes pictures. Do you do the same thing he does? I don't know.
Right. You
know, why am I going to pay you money if you don't even know what you do?
Right.
I like that. That was good. This has been so fun. Thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Thanks for having me. Bye, everybody. It's good to see
you. Absolutely. Bye.